high drop for Jackie Elka.
Goal! Oh, what a goal! What a goal! Yes! Unbelievable finish to the Merseyside derby!
Welcome to the Toffee Blues, your source for all things Everton, and welcome to another podcast where we're going to get through a few different segments. First of all, we're going to have the extra time segment where we're going to look back on our 2-1 win at Wolves, a very impressive away win at Molineux. Following that, we were supposed to have the segment where we looked ahead to the Aston Villa game, but as a result of some recent revelations that the game was going to be postponed due to the COVID outbreak at Aston Villa, we have got a different segment where we're going to discuss potential striking additions with obviously our strike force being decimated at the moment with Dominic Calvert-Lewin out injured. So we're going to look into that. And then at the end as well, we're going to have a quiz where my two guests tonight, Owen Parks and Paul McAllister, go head-to-head in a classic matchday squad quiz. So without further ado, we'll get straight into it and we'll look back on our win over Wolves. Welcome to extra time segment for Wolves 1, Everton 2. Everton actually pull off a very, very competent away display at Molineux to take all 3 points. Michael Keane scored the winning goal after Alex Iwobi opened the scoring and Ruben Neves actually scored inside the penalty area. Very interesting game in many respects. I'm looking back on this one with Paul and Owen. Start with you, Owen. How did you feel about that performance? It was a really good away display, I thought.
Yeah, I was really, really pleased with the sort of the way we went about, and there was so many times in that game I felt that there was just a different point where Everton quite a bit, and it just felt like we didn't sort of succumb to the sort of stereotypes and the norms that are associated with Everton in sort of tough away games. We just dug in there, stuck it out. Defensively very, very good, and okay, we weren't blessed with attacking options, but we didn't need them in the end because we got a set piece and a nice bit of play from more creative players, and a Iwobi finished her off. So even though it wasn't vintage in terms of what we could do in terms of affecting the game more, but I thought the sort of the desire to make sure that we could at least get something from the game got us the win. And that sort of, I'm going to say it again, clean sheet mentality to just limit the amount of chances the opposition has.
Clean sheet mentality, that thing is a little bit of clean sheet.
No, it isn't as much as getting a clean sheet. Every time it's
the idea. Taking pride and keeping it out the goal, I know what you mean.
Yeah, making sure that the opposition don't score more goals than you. I think that's probably a better way of sort of describing it, but making sure we keep a clean sheet is a part of that. We didn't quite on do a night because of a bit of a mix-up between Davis and what have you. But yeah, Eva still part from that. I thought we were defensively very good and we found a couple of moments and we moved into the top four for a brief period of time. I mean, it's up and down that much at the moment. You can't really stick a position on any football club, but we're over 30 points and we're not at a halfway point yet, so we can get another win before we hit 19 games, so I'll probably be in May with it.
I'm going to stay up.
Well, yeah, I was going to be a bit more positive and say that if we get 35 points by the time we get to 19 games, which is this rate, will probably be March by the time we play the 19th game with the postponements, then we could be on track for something like 70 points. So very interesting to, when you look back at the first half of the season, that we've been really, really good. And I thought this game was just a huge example of Everton in the last 2 months or so.
I think we've really learned. I mean, I don't think we necessarily played amazingly, but we've learned to grind out results. And I don't think that's something we had in us before Carlo came here.
I was reading a lot of what people was putting on Twitter after the game, and the purists who believe unless you've had 70% possession and won 4-0 and 28 shots, you haven't played well, which is a load of nonsense. But you let them live in their own football bubble, because ultimately for me, 3 points at the end of the day is exactly the only thing.
For those of you out there who do believe in like XG,
XG. I mean, XG
I know what you mean though. Like, we've had less XG in probably the majority of our games this season, and we've won
more than we've lost. It's this nonsense peddled by people who usually said Graham Potter should be the Everton manager. So that's the kind of level
playing
of
football the right way.
You really don't like Graham Potter, do you? You've really got it in for Graham Potter.
Graham Potter, honestly, has won. I think there's like the most bang average teams have won the same amount of games as the Amex in 2020 as Brighton, which is one. So I'm not talking about Graham Potter as a to do him down. I'm just saying he's the sort of poster boy for these people who won 28 shots and 70% possession. Unless you've had that, you've not played well.
Yeah.
That was my point anyway, that there's more than one way to skin a cat. Everton are doing it in their own way at the moment, which is finding an effective way to play football, whether the purest liker or not.
Yeah, it's one of them.
That's my point about digging into Graham Potter again.
Yeah. It's one of them. I'm surprised. Thank God, Eddie, I wasn't in the job.
Well, I've heard a few rumblings that Newcastle might want them. I'm telling you now, Newcastle, Eddie Howe equals war with me. I hate them, both of them.
That would be absolute carnage. I mean, I can imagine it turning into carnage at St. James Park as well, by the way, because I don't think that would end well for Newcastle.
It wouldn't, no.
But, I doubt that'll end up coming to pass. Even Mike Ashley isn't that daft.
We'll see.
But I thought we defend them very well. It doesn't make for, you know, definitely doesn't do my nerves any good, put it that way, because we always seem to be grinding out a one goal lead in the dying minutes. And
when we scored the second goal, Keane said, I'm going to jump in the gun a bit here with the game, but once we scored that second goal, I had no doubt we'd win the game. I was fully confident that Everton would win that game 2-1. Now you're laughing because
I've watched too many Roberto Martinez games to shake the trauma off me.
I've managed to sort of take that away from my head, that sort of Marco Silva Martinez era of playing kamikaze football. Whereas I know now this group of players, if they take a lead with about 20 minutes to go, they're more than likely going to see her out.
Yeah.
I think they've got too much of a mentality to see games. I know the Newcastle game was a massive anomaly last year.
I know, but I was at that game as well, so that's just re-injected the trauma into the veins from Martinez.
Yeah, I still don't know how that ever came to pass that, but my point being anyway, I feel like we're...
That was my last time in Goodison before this all happened.
Really?
The last time I was in Goodison until now, I was stood in the stands wondering what the hell had just happened to us.
My last words at Goodison were very strongly worded messages towards the then referee in the Man United game.
Oh, yeah, okay. I was there for that.
But, Paul, what was your take on the performance yesterday? Is there anything that stood out to you?
I just like the mentality change that Owen touched on. It was night and day from what we saw at Rotherham, wasn't it? Where against Rotherham, it just looked like the players had been dragged out of bed, didn't it? And they all just couldn't be bothered, and there was not that extra spring in all the steps. Like, they just weren't quick to chase people down, they weren't passing the ball around with any zip, really. And it was the opposite against Wolves. It looked like, even at the times in the game where they were having the better of it, we sort of had this mindset of, you're not going to take this game away from us, you're not going to just knock us down, you're not going to knock us down and keep us down. We're going to stand up, take what you can throw at us, and then that's what we've done. We, in a sense, rope-a-dope them, to use a boxing term. We buzzed them early. They came back and had a little rally and then looked good for spells here and there. I mean, over the 90 minutes, they probably were the best. I wouldn't say they were the better team, actually, but they looked like they were having the better of it for a large period. Yeah, I wouldn't say they were the better team, actually, but they looked like they were having the better of it because they were getting a lot of shots off at our goal, even though they weren't really going anywhere. I think Fabio Silva was the only effort on target, wasn't he, in the first half? Other than
I'm not going to lie, he is a bit of a strapalacy himself, and he seems to have
a 17. he's 17. It's a bit early to be throwing him into trouble.
I'm not judging it. I'm a judging the decision making.
Umani asked for 17 months.
About 50 years ago. my point being, though, is I know they were having most of the possession and most of the shots and most of the corners and free kicks around our box, but after they had equalised there and that little 10-minute spell they had after it where they were looking really good, they didn't look like they were going to score again. Whereas you had that feeling of, if we can just get one good chance dropped to us, I'd fancy us to bury it, even though we don't have a striker there. And that's what happened exactly. We waited for our moments, we got a set piece, made the most of it, got a goal, and I wasn't quite as confident as Owen was when I thought, right, that's game done. We've won this. Because it is Everton.
It's confidence.
Yeah, it's still Everton at the end of the day. But I did think to myself, unless something crazy happens here, unless the referee just gives them a stupid penalty or one of our players does something absolutely daft, then I don't see them really breaking through us because we just look that solid.
Well, that was the thing, I think, for me. Obviously, there was
to be fair, my confidence wasn't as much of our own sort of ability as the fact that their striker was Fabio Silva. That gave me the confidence.
Yeah, I think for me...
Cazone came on news.
You're in a very bullying mood tonight, aren't you? Like, first you're having a running down Graham Potter, and now you're having a pop at a 17-year-old saying he's hopeless. Like,
yeah, I know, he's younger than me, isn't he?
Yeah, leave the lad alone. He is trying, do you know what I mean?
For me, I think, John, you were saying, like you said, that you expected us to, like, give away a soft penalty or something. I mean, there was the Yeri Mina sort of thing that, like, Wolves fans were proper kicking off about, even though there wasn't much in it.
Right at the end of the game,
like, in the time, or maybe just before it, like,
across that 5 minutes of added time.
Yeah, the 5 minutes, that would definitely...
Five minutes of added time.
Where did he find 5 minutes from?
That's what I was going to say. That 5 minutes of added time that the referee just invented, he was doing his bit to help them. It's just they couldn't make...
The referee, honestly, if Everton ever won goals to the good going into the 90th minute, it's always 5 minutes plus, without fail.
I'm convinced. I've said this on Twitter. I'm convinced referees are told to do that, you know, on purpose. I really am. I think if a game hasn't had a certain amount of goals in it, or it's a game that will have like a lot of impact on the league, like a team could jump up several positions, I think they're told at the end of the day the Premier League is a brand. It's something that wants to draw in new fans, make it as dramatic as you can. That's your word. That's the word I'd use. But the word they'd use is, let's make it as entertaining and dramatic as possible. Let's just throw on as much added time as we can. I know
drama.
Something can happen, yeah. I'm convinced they do it on purpose. I really am. There's no other explanation.
But I know for a fact that, like, I mean, Wolves fans made a lot of the Yeri Mina. Basically, it was basically a cross coming and he caught Kiana Hoover with his elbow. And, like, Wolves fans were like, that should have been a penalty. Like, where's the VAR and all that? But to be honest, I was a bit nervous when I saw that, but the real one where it really ripped it was when Decore gave away that free kick and Neves hit the post.
Yeah, I was. That was a moment where I did
Decore give that away. I was bricking it.
Yeah, because he can whack them in, Neves. I really rate that, Neves.
He's a very good player, Neves. And, you know, I think that's the first goal he's ever scored for them. That's not a penalty that he actually scored in the area, because most of his goals are like 40-yard screamers.
Well, he had a screamer somewhere in the second half. I can't remember whether it was late on in the game or just after half time.
Yeah, he flicked it up and volleyed it, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it was never going in, but on the replay, it was actually closer than it looked in real time. It looked like it was flying well over the bar, but in the replay, Pickford was scrambling a bit. But other than that free kick, there was no real moment where you think, oh God, like, they're in here. Someone just get it out, as the typical saying is at Goodison, get it away, push out. There was no like frantic moment of defending other than that free kick. We just think, yeah. Other than that free kick, you thought, I don't really see where a goal's going to come from here unless we just absolutely gift it to them.
So they didn't put us under a lot of pressure, at the end. That goes for the whole game, really, not just when we put our noses in front. I think they had a few maybes, but I don't think it was as such. It weren't a performance. We talk about our defence. They had 13 shots, but I don't know how many of them were on target. Was it just the goal,
Not many.
There weren't many. But,
the goal and that tame shot from Silva in the first half, and I can't remember any other than that.
They didn't have us all over the place like that. It was very much them trying to feel it out. They couldn't, so we get
the we're very street smart now, which is something we haven't been for a long time.
Probably not since Moyes, even under Moyes, not that much, not since early Moyes,
like the Moyes that was getting us in the Europa League and finishing top five regularly. We're a team now that we know when to commit a foul, we know when to waste time, we know when to, even the manager, fair play to him, he knows when to make substitutions. Do you remember when Moyes used to wait until the last minute of stoppage time so we make a sub?
Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah, he knows
even little things like Duncan Ferguson pretending not to be able to turn the freaking board on to do the sub. It
all makes a difference, and all clubs do it to some extent. They all know how to have a bit of gamesmanship that goes in their favour. And for years, we were just this, what we seemed to be, just this holier than thou outfit where an opposition player would go down injured and we couldn't wait to kick it out and help them, even if we had them under pressure. It annoyed me so much, and we don't do that anymore, and I'm so happy about it.
No, you see, we're not supposed to do this because it's apparently anti-football, that if you use anything to your advantage like that, it's anti-football, so...
I don't know what it is, it's a proper football Twitter terminology, that, isn't it? All that anti-football, it comes out of like, you know, these top six basically bandwagoners. It's
something that's used by big teams that they want little teams to be so they can beat them easily. That's all it is, and I don't give a shite about what top teams I don't give a shite with anyone who doesn't support Everton likes it or doesn't.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's anti-football, though, so we can't applaud it because it's anti-football.
It's not being played in the right way.
No, it isn't, because you can't take the ball in your own corner, or if a player goes down with cramp, that's anti-football. So it's all right seeing players literally dive all over the place. That's part of the modern game, but players going down with cramp or anything, that's anti-football. Just thought I'd let you know.
God forbid if Virgil van Dijk had cramp.
I don't even want to mention them, to be honest. I don't. And I'm not saying that to be like horrible, bitter. It's just they're so far from my headspace right now, and they should be so far from every Evertonian's headspace. Who's asked what they're doing? Focus on what Everton are doing, because we're doing really well at the minute.
One game at a time, isn't it? Whoever our next opponent is probably in March at some point, but whoever that is, just make sure
It's going to be Sheffield and the Cup now, isn't it? After the cancellation. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's an evening kickoff because it's going to be on BT. I've seen it's 8 o'clock.
No chance here. He'll send the under-14s.
Well, we were talking about this, me and James, on the live stream the other day. Owen, James knows more about Sheffield than I do. I'm going to be honest. I haven't followed them at all. I couldn't tell you much about them at all. Like, what should we expect when Sheffield rock up?
I think... Oh, yeah. Owen, you're probably clued up as well, mate.
We'll do a preview of this, but are they going to give us a game like Rotherham are going to do?
They would have if they would have given Tony Pulis the money he wanted in January. But I don't even know who the manager's going to be for the game, because they went in the separate ways.
So they don't have a manager? I didn't even know that, honestly. So they're going to turn up the caretaker by the look of it.
Probably they appointed Tony Pulis and they gave him a few months. The results were patchy, but he was bottom
and he got them off the bottom. They were like a couple of points off safety.
He'd won a few and he'd started to climb and he'd started to get it going. And then he said, he needed money in January to keep them up. They started on minus points under Gary Monk and then. The Chancery, being the lunatic he is, probably said, "What's cheaper, sacking Pulis or giving them money?" So they sacked him, and so he went. And though they haven't got a manager, Paul Cook's been linked, but I don't think Paul Cook will go there.
He's better than that, if you ask me. I really rate him as a manager. I think he deserves a top half championship team.
It could be Joey Barton. His name's gone through the Browns. I don't know, to be fair, but if Tony Pulis was there, you'd know he'd give us a game, but I don't know who their manager is.
Yeah. You've told me more than I knew.
I don't know this much.
Yeah, I think I'd heard that Pulis was their manager, but I'd completely forgot about it, and I didn't even know that he'd been sacked until Owen told me then. But if you'd have said to me on the live stream the other day, James, that Tony Pulis was Sheffield Wednesday's manager, I would have gone, oh, that's going to be a dog of a game. That, you know, he's just going to come and play the most. I know we were just saying how anti the right way of football we are.
But you can respectfully admit that it makes it hard to play against.
Yeah, as much as we were saying like there's no such thing as the right way to play football, you just knew Tony Pulis was going to come and throw every man behind the ball and just make it the worst spectacle you could imagine, and the players who would be on the day would just be really like just stuck in an maybe in a bit of a can't be arsed mood like they were against Rotherham, because the opponent was just being so negative. You could just pitch them sitting in a block and we'd end up resorting to just shots
from knocking it round like the midfield all game, and
he'd just be one of those games,
for as long as he could, and then maybe nick one of a set piece. I still think he will do that, but I just don't think he'll be as organised to do that without him
there. No, Tony Pulis is not going to be their manager. That makes me feel a lot better about that tie now.
And knowing Leo and a chance here, he'll probably get the caretaker to send the under-12s in because they've got a championship game on the Wednesday.
Happy days.
So, I don't know who their caretaker is, by the way. I just know it's a caretaker.
Well, with regards to that, obviously, from the game that we've just witnessed, you know, if we take that attitude into that next game, then, you know, I think we'll be absolutely fine, yeah. But it's about, can we, you know, maintain high standards? You know, I didn't like what I saw against Rotherham, but I was very pleasantly surprised by what I saw in the Wolves game. So, you know, if these players can just sort of keep the standards high, then they can do it. They can beat anybody.
I think Ancelotti is slowly but surely rubbing off on the players and imprinting his personality on the team. It can't happen overnight with any manager. It's going to take time for the manager to get the team to represent him, because everyone says, don't they, in the game, the team on the pitch is a reflection of the man on the side. And very slowly, Ancelotti is imprinting himself onto this team where, okay, there's the odd bump, there's the odd game where it doesn't go your way and you're quite annoyed afterwards thinking, how have we lost that? But a lot of the time, you look at it and you think, you know what, we've really got this nailed here to a T. We know exactly how to play against this lot. We're doing all the right things. We're staying really organised. We're not panicking if we go behind or things don't go our way. And we're making our own luck, which is so important, because we haven't had one of those managers who does all of that in so, so, so long.
Yeah, he's a very, very intelligent man.
I was saying before about the purists who just moan about any sort of negative team we put out up to them. But take their moaning aside, he's done a fantastic job in the year he's been here, sort of dragging us up from our asses into where we are now. I think he's done an amazing job, and I just want to put a bit of appreciation on the man's name, because I don't think he gets the credit he deserves for the job he's done.
I think he certainly does within our quarters, but in the media, obviously not enough, nowhere near enough.
No, all they talk about in the media about Ancelotti when they praise him is what a lovely fella he is, and oh, you can't not like him, he's such a gentleman. It's like, yeah, we know all of that. We've known all that for decades, that he's a really nice fella.
He's an absolute genius of a manager.
Yeah. Praise him for being the tactical genius and putting on all these masterclasses that he does. Every time
getting the best out of a team, but like, let's be honest, we've still got some very mediocre players, and he gets
mediocre more, being generous.
Well, he's getting a lot out of them, even, and that's actually something really to be commended, that he's like, you know, getting some good performances out of players who aren't really good enough.
Even the players who we previously sort of, as a fan base, sort of put to one side, he's really got a tune out of them. Like the Wobi probably being the best example. He was really unsure about what his role was before Carlo. And now
Owen Andre Gomez got a brilliant assist in that game for the winner.
Yeah, he even broken the clock, strike twice.
It goes back to what I was saying before. He knows how to change the tempo of a game. He knows what players to bring off the bench and when to use them. Do you know what I mean? He's not just throwing players on for the sake of throwing them on just to get a couple of minutes. He knows that Andre Gomez in that instance would come on and grab a hold of the ball in midfield and stop them dispossessing us, because Decore was tired and Davis wasn't really doing much outside of his own half. He knew Gomez would get on the ball and push us further up the field and allow the front three or front two, whatever they were, or front four, depending on how we set up. The attacking players could get stay a little bit further forward and not retreat so much, because chances were Wolves weren't going to go far past that halfway line in possession because Gomez would be there to cut it out. He just reads these things really well, and he knows when to throw on Richarlison, because Richarlison, he knew their back line's tired. If Richarlison's got any minutes in him at all, use him for the final 15-20 when he's fresh and he can run at them, be very direct, and it'll just give their defenders a nightmare. There's no point just throwing on a striker who's going to sit in the box, because whether they're tired or not, their defenders will be able to handle them.
I mean, Richarlison, I mean, he missed a good chance to kill the game in the last couple of minutes, but like, if he was fully fit, I reckon he'd sort that one out easy. But what I will say is, considering even with him not being maybe fully fit, he did win some good like little fouls for us and stuff up the pitch. Like, you know, we saw that we didn't really have that at the start of the game, and when he come on, you know, he did win us a few free kicks.
That was probably in the manager's thinking. He knows if I just go on and if I go throw this centre forward on, which is what Richarlison was asked to do, and just be energetic, just run around and cause murder for their defenders, just get up close to them, come deep and get the ball and dribble, and they'll either have to foul you, or you'll back off you and let you bring the ball further up, that it can let everyone behind you get further forward. It was just the right idea. Whereas if we thrown Tosin on, then what's he going to do apart from just hang around the box? He's not going to stretch the defence. He's not going to get between the lines, is he?
It was a really good tactic. I think all the subs were quite good in terms of the decisions that he made. I mean, the Gomez one being the big one, he came on. Davis was flagging a bit. Gomez comes on and puts a really good cross in for the winner. Richarlison was great, and he brought Coleman on as well. So, like, sort of, it was almost like two banks of four by the end, proper, like, low block stuff, which was, you know, that sort of over the line. I thought his three subs were really good decisions.
Yeah, we were, as well.
We were pretty much in a low block for most of the game, to be fair.
But it was a proper, it was a proper 4-4-1-1 by the end, though, wasn't it?
I think we were on the goal line at some one point.
Well, if that's what you need to do to get over the line, that's what you do.
I agree.
Wolves were, as I was saying, all Wolves' hopes were of getting a second goal. It was just hoping they got a lucky break, or they could lump it long and get in behind us. It wasn't going to happen if we were playing two backs of four.
If Neves would have scored, but on that free kick, they would have done the exact same thing. It's just idiot to think you should just keep attacking the game, no matter, play the same way 3-0 was, if you would 3-0 down. That really think that you shouldn't sort of defend a lead, but we did and we won the game, so I'll keep counting the points while they...
I think you can play when you're 3-0 up as opposed to when you're 3-0 down. You can play the same way. It's when you're 1-0 up compared to 1-0 down. You don't want to be defending a 1-0 lead by legging your entire team forward.
Yeah, but if you're 3-0 up on Man City and we start rolling around from the back, I'll be fuming.
Yeah, it's true. But, I think all in all, though, we are showing a lot more nous this season. That's obviously coming from Ancelotti, but there's the additional idea of, like, some of these players really have picked up in performances, and none more so, I think, than the two goal scorers, Keane and Iwobi, have both been... I mean, Keane, we saw a bit of it last season, but he's been absolutely excellent all season. And Iwobi's just getting better and better as the season goes on. He's starting to pick up a little bit of consistency to his game, which is something we never thought we'd see from him, and that's a real breath of fresh air.
This is my time to unshamelessly sort of boast about my sort of long-term positions on these two players, because I'm a huge fan of Michael Keane for ages now, and I think he's a good defender. Struggles with confidence at times. He hasn't always been there, and he's never going to fit silver ball, is he? So it was always going to be a struggle. But since the manager came in, and obviously in those days years ago with Dyche, I think he's proved to be a really good defender. So no surprises with him.
He used to be the one who leads at the back.
Well, no. He takes pride in defending, and I think people have really underestimated the fact that he's sort of been sort of brought up in football with that sort of mentality to defend. So the fact that we're keeping clean sheets and seeing leads out now with him being the focal point of the defence. They should be surprised to know one. And Yerry Mina as well, by the way.
Mina's another one, and Godfrey as well. I think all three of them take pride in defending now.
Holgate does too.
Yeah, they all do.
So when there's a four of them, it's, I could imagine being murder for an opposition team.
By the way, can we just have a little big up the moment where Ben Godfrey was roaring at their player for being injured? I think Ben Godfrey was just probably like having a go at Pedro Neto while he was getting treatment for like a knee injury. Maybe he actually did get classes.
Yeah.
Why not? Why not? You don't win by being nice.
Exactly. It's just class though, isn't it? You love to see it.
It is pretty amazing, I'm not gonna lie, to see Ben Godfrey and Alex Iwobi, forgot to mention him. Yeah, he's always been someone I've been desperate to see given a chance in a run of games. I feel like I've always refrained from sort of going in too hard on him because I've always seen the talent. And yeah, I think he's doing really well now and he's got that role and I want to see him keep it. And I think the key for him to do that is more productivity, but good job from him as well.
Getting there, yeah. Well, he contributes, you know, we talk about him not getting enough goals or assists. He got one yesterday and it was a good, really well taken one, so... No long may that continue.
A reminder, people were saying Bolasie was better than him a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Who said that?
Joe Williams, the other 15-year-old.
Williams, who used to play for Everton?
No, the lads, the wind-up merchants on Twitter.
Goodness. The mind boggles. But anyway, we'll leave it at that one. Last thing before we finish on this one. Is a lot was made, Joe, before and after the game about Wolves' injuries, you know, like Jimenez and Pedence and Traore and that. But I feel like people are understating the amount of injuries we've had this season. You know, Alan's out, who's a crucial player, and DCL, obviously, and a few others.
If people don't want to give us credit and just blame the fact that we won on the fact that Wolves have got injuries, pardon me, French, I don't give a shite. We won. We beat the team that was in front of us. They didn't beat the team that was in front of them. That's all there is to do it.
That's the thing. I think we're both going through bad moments, us and Wolves, with injuries, and I think we just handled the situation, you know, the adversity better than they did. So, and that's it. At the end of the day, but you'll never hear the press say that. So, it's down to us to be the mouthpiece for that.
As I'll say, keep saying, you've got to find a way of winning. We keep finding ways of winning, so
no matter who's playing. Very impressed with that. I think our pragmatism and our adaptability has been probably one of the best things that I've seen come out of this season.
Let other people worry about performances and passing and all that nonsense. Let's just find a way of winning every week.
Yeah. We'll leave it at that. Before Graham Potter gets mentioned again, we'll finish... Welcome to another segment where Paul, Owen and I are going to be discussing our striking options for the rest of this season. Of course, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, as we speak, is out with a hamstring injury. We started with no recognised striker from the beginning against Wolves, but eventually, of course, Richarlison came on as a striker and we saw that game out and come out with a 2-1 win. But it does beg the question, is long-term, what could the solution be? There's rumours about Cheng Tosun, of course, the other option, potentially leaving. Rumours to like Hertha Berlin, Frankfurt, and West Brom, of course, under Sam Allardyce. And, you know, there's a couple of rumours being thrown around about Tosun going. And with that in mind, Moise Kean as well, it looks like his deal could be made permanent sooner rather than later. At PSG, so it looks as though we will need another striker to bring in. And with that in mind, we're going to try and look through the sort of realistic options that we've got to bring in. To obviously somebody you presume when Calvert-Lewin is fit would be on the bench, but you know it's not always easy to find that balance of a very good player who is willing to sit on the bench behind another striker. It's a difficult position to recruit for that sort of second reserved striker role. So with that in mind, Paul and Owen, we're going to have a little discussion about a potential backup striker who could sit on the bench. Owen, do you have any ideas of anyone you'd be happy to have?
There'd be loads of players I'd be happy to have, but it's whether they can do it come in January. There's just so many extenuating circumstances, but for doing a deal now, then I'm not sure when will be done. But I definitely do think we do need a player, well, two players that play in the forward areas, and another winger and a backup striker, and obviously see to see Chen Tosun leave the football club. I feel we'd be in good stead from then on in. But yeah, we do need someone else. We've been linked with like the Milik and Josh King in the past. I don't see any of them deals coming to pass.
I don't think Josh King's a goer at all.
No.
We'd have got him. If we were going to get him, we'd have got him in the summer, I think. I think we were never in for Josh King.
Absolutely.
Really. No, I don't think that's on. There's other rumours about different strikers. I just think it's a really difficult month to do any business in. So, especially in the current circumstances, if you're getting someone from abroad, is this a really desirable place to come right now? I don't know. To be Everton's backup striker when you're not really going to get much of a look, and with Dominic Calvert-Lewin sort of important to the team, I think it's really difficult. If I'm going to make a suggestion of someone we could bring in who plays in the forward positions but not necessarily a striker, it would be Ismaïla Sarr from Watford. He's not a striker, but he can play in the forward positions. And if Dominic Calvert-Lewin wasn't fit, Richarlison could go up front, and he's played up front himself, Sarr, so he's quick, dynamic. I think if I was to do a deal for anyone, it would be Ismaïla Sarr. But then would Watford sell? They're in the top six. Would they want to sell mid-season? So there's so many. The only strikers that you'd probably be able to get would be to be honest, yard dogs in terms of getting Cenk Tosun's. That would be who would be available. And I don't really want them. So I think we could get someone like Sarr, or if we could get a striker, then fantastic. But I feel like it will be really difficult to do at the moment.
Paul, any ideas? A striker who could fit the bill?
I know what mould of striker I'd like to see us sign. We need to sign someone who can hold the ball up, because there's no point of signing just a slotter to stick in the box, because we've got one of them, and the way we set up, he's not going to get much joy at all, is he? If we're going to get one striker who we're just going to try and get play with his back to goal, that's where I think we need to go, because we do throw a lot of crosses in the box. We need a striker who can get us up the pitch and bring the wide forwards into play. And we need someone who doesn't mind getting maybe bashed about a little bit and can look after himself. There's no point signing anyone who's, unless he's absolutely rapid and just an amazing finisher, there's no point in signing anyone who's under 6 foot, really, because they're just going to be marked out of a game, and we don't play the style of football where they're going to get chances, because that's what Tosun's problem, isn't it? Tosun could probably finish a lot of chances if he was one-on-one, got half a yard in the box, but that's not how we go forward as a team. So I do like the sound of that Milic from Napoli. He's mentioned he's available. I think he's definitely available this month. It looks like there's no way back for him at Napoli, and he's got a buyout clause, apparently. But he's probably got a lot of options, and I doubt he's Everton to come and sit on Everton's bench would be his first one, even if we do go in for him.
Does he feature heavily under Ancelotti when he was at Napoli?
I think he was there, definitely. I don't know if he was first choice. Do they still play? I can't think of his name. The fella whose name begins with an I. I can't pronounce Insigne. It. I, yeah, Insigne. Do they still play Insigne? Yeah, do they still play him as the number nine?
They play him as an inverted forward, like an inside left.
Either way, I think if I'm going to bring someone up who fits that kind of mould of a striker who I think would come to Everton would be Mainz's, don't laugh, Jean-Philippe Mateta. The Jean-Philippe. Mateta, he's that.
The mind only sign players called Jean-Philippe.
I don't know. Come to think of it, that's really become a theme. That's why I laughed. But yeah, he's a decent goal scorer. He's similar in terms of style of play to Calvert-Lewin. No good, I would say. But I think he's someone who would come, and I think he's a much better player than Tosun. Been linked with Crystal Palace this window, so maybe he's someone we could look at. I think he, Weghorst has been linked from Wolfsburg, but I think he's got.
I feel like he's
really good. I do like him, but I think his ceiling's a lot higher than Everton's bench. So I think that'll be a struggle, that one. But he's a much better player than Mateta. But I think Mateta is a decent option. I could see that one maybe coming to pass. We'll look at someone of that mould.
Certainly, yeah.
You say... Sorry, how'd you pronounce his name? That Wolfsburg lad, the German. I was going to mention him, but I don't want to butcher his name. Berghorst, yeah. Yeah, as you say, he's probably got an higher ceiling, but he's not young, him, you know, he is like 28. So if he's going to move and get one last big opportunity, he's going to have to make it soon. And are any other clubs in for him at the moment that he'd knock Everton back for?
I don't know, but I think there should be because I think he's a really good striker.
Yeah, he's a really good player. I like him a lot. I think he's on double figures this season, and he's hit double figures, well into double figures the two previous seasons he's been at Wolfsburg, who are a mid-table team at best in Germany. It's not like a team.
They're harsh on Wolfsburg, aren't they?
Yeah, they're a decent team.
They're a decent team, but they're not a team that is ever going for the league, are they? Do you know what I mean? They're always hovering around the European... They're hovering around the Europa League spots. Sometimes they get there, sometimes they don't. The point I was making is they're not a team that just scores bags and bags of goals and creates bags and bags of chances like Bayern Munich or Dortmund, are they? So to be getting 16, 17 goals in their season, in their team, in the two first seasons you were there, and I think he's on double figures already for this year, he's got to have something about him. And he is a big, strapping, strong, old-fashioned number 9 player like Calvert-Lewin. And I do think that's the mold of striker we need to go for. We need to go someone who is as much like Calvert-Lewin as we can. So we're probably not going to find we're probably not going to find a target man who's got the pace that Calvert-Lewin's got, because for a player who goes up with a lot of headers, he does cover a lot of ground and he's quite quick on the break.
Do you know what's interesting? I mean, you two are probably going to piss yourselves laughing at me for this one, but I would have gone in for like Haller or something from West Ham. I was thinking, as a bench warmer, he's better than Tosin. I think he would have done all right, you know.
20 million, no?
No, not for that price, though.
You'd think he'd be a David Moyes striker all day long, wouldn't you? Because he's a big, strong player. But the reason it's not worked out for him and that West Ham are happy to make such a massive loss, I read in The Athletic that they don't like him in training because despite his size, he's meant to be very, very soft. And he goes down very easily, and he can be a bit petulant. Like, he's not the type of player where if you barge him, he's a defender is bullying him a bit. He's going to think, right, let's have a battle then. I'm going to bully you back. He's just the type of striker who is quick to complain to referees and doesn't really fancy the physical fight aspect. That's what I read from a story in Athletic. So, do you know what I mean? When Moyes went into West Ham, I thought, yeah, he'll get the best out of Haller. He's an old-fashioned, like, Yakubu type striker, isn't he? But it's not working for him at all, and that's why they're happy to just let him go for 30 million less than what they signed him for.
Yeah, I think Mateta is quite quick. So when you say Calvert-Lewin's pace, I think Mateta could possibly match that. I think Evan will look for a slightly higher calibre than Mateta, but I think in terms of stylistically, I think he's a good fit. I like Weghorst a lot. It's just a question of whether he would come here.
I think he could come here, but it's whether we're willing to spend the money in January, because if Wolfsburg sell him, then they're going to drop down 4 or 5 places in Bundesliga easily, unless they sign another striker to replace them. So signing him basically completely derails a team season, so you'd have to pay a lot of money to get him out in January. But I do really like him. I do think a Premier League club should be going in for him in the summer if he stays there. Yeah. Here's one I'll mention. I don't think it's realistic, and I don't think I'd have him, but I have seen him mentioned by some other people, and I think he is worth discussing. If you could get him, would you go back and maybe have Giroud? Because rumours is he's going to be on the
move. I've heard about this. I mean, I would have him, but it's not realistic.
You know, my
I know it's not realistic. He doesn't want to move up to out of London, does he? He's going to have options to either go back to France, or I've seen other London clubs linked with him. But let's just say, for argument's sake, he was willing to sit down at the table at us and say, right, I will move up and I will come and be your number two backup. But this is, I want, let's say he asks for like a 2.5-3 year deal. Would you give him that? Because he's probably going to ask for that. That's the only way I think he'd even consider coming out of London, if he got a longer contract.
Yeah, I maybe would. I really like Giroud. So
2.5. If it was 2.5, 3.5, probably no.
Yeah, he got an 18-month deal at Chelsea, didn't he? Which runs out, I think, in the summer. And he's probably going to leave this month or go for a free. But I think if he's going to come out of his comfort zone, he's going to want a deal that's going to basically set him up to the end of his career, isn't he? Either that, or he's just going to go for somewhere for a payday, like MLS or the East. Only way he stays in the Premier League outside of London is if a team just really gives him an offer that he just can't refuse.
Or if we're going for the other end of the spectrum, somebody else who's a lot younger and who's on the upward curve. What about Ivan Toney from Brentford? I think he's maybe someone nothing now because he only joins in the summer. But if Brentford don't go up again, they're very prone to selling players. I think he could be a really good option for us.
Yeah, he is quite a good player, Ivan Toney. I think I remember the Aston Villa, was he, or
could have been. Yeah, he was. I forgot where he came from to go to Brentford, but he is a really good striker. Could be an option.
I'm trying to think what else there is out there at the moment in terms of striking options. It is obviously it's a difficult time to recruit. January, I mean, there's rumours about Luka Jovic going on loan back to Frankfurt. Would you consider him?
Yeah, I'd consider him, but the thing is, you know, Real Madrid, they're desperate to get shot of him because he's not worked at all. They'd want you to pay 100% of his wages, most probably, and he's on a big contract. So he costs a lot in that sense. And they'd probably want a guarantee that you're going to buy him at the end of the deal as well. And again, he's a poacher, isn't he? I know he's strong, like, he's tall, but has he got the legs to be playing in our type of team? If you haven't got the legs, then you've got to be a real man mountain of a striker who can hold the ball up. And I'm not sure if he...
I don't know if he's got that in him.
Yeah, I think he's caught in between. I think obviously he's a better player, but I think he's caught too much in the Tolson mould where he's not one or the other and he's not in the right team to get the best out of him.
Yeah, it's always difficult with those kind of players. They don't seem to know what they are, some of them. Like, what sort of role they're going to take on in the team.
Yeah, they're a striker who's got to play in a two. They can't lead the line. And there's just not any top teams in England, at least, that play with two strikers.
No.
If Tolson goes and leaves Everton, and even if he goes and plays for a West Brom or back to Palace, and they put someone up next to him who will support him and do all the hard work, then he will probably bag a few goals because I do think he's capable of...
He's an all right finisher. Chances.
He's not Niasse where if you put him through on goal, you still don't fancy him to score. But he'll just do something stupid like fall over or blast it, right? He's not that level of bad. It's just he can't do anything else that to get himself in that position. He can't win headers, really. He can't beat a man. He can't hold the ball up. He can't replay well enough to get between the lines to make a run in behind. He needs the ball on a plate for him in order to score, and he's at the wrong club for that. If he was at Man City, the amount of chances they make and how easily they get it into the opposition third, he score goals, but Everton just don't have the players to basically crowbar him into the team.
No, not at all. It's difficult though. Obviously, the striker market's a bit. It's a difficult one at the best of times to recruit the right kind of striker for your team. But
there's always Troy Deeney.
You know what? I would not have him. Absolutely not. But I still think a Premier League club should have picked him up in the summer because he could have left Watford if he'd got the right offer. No, he's not, but he's good enough for the likes of like a West Brom or someone like that. If he'd have gone to West Brom, he'd probably got enough goals to give them a fighting chance of staying up. I don't think they've got any chance at the moment. You know what I mean? Some club somewhere probably could have picked him up and had got a really good use out of him. Troy Deeney.
Yeah, West Brom would be a good shout.
Yeah, I don't think Troy Deeney is so bad or so finished as a player that he was ready to drop out of the Premier League completely. Along with Watford. I'm surprised no one went for him.
Yeah, that is interesting, to be honest, because he was always a nuisance at this level. So, you know.
Yeah, that exactly, yeah.
Even if he wasn't like class, he made himself seen, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I meant, yeah.
But, he's indefinite.
Yeah, I know he's an absolute blatant, like, but. of a fella.
Speaking of absolute blurts who make themselves seen, what about that Morelos who plays for Rangers? He's a bit of a crank. Is he any good, though? Like, would he be able to make a step up to a Premier League team?
No, not for us, no. I'd rather keep Tosin.
Not a top six level. I mean, I do think he's ready to leave Rangers behind. I think he's shown enough to suggest that he shouldn't be in Scotland all his life. But if he does get a move to the Premier League, then he is probably going to end up on the bottom half side and he's going to have to prove himself down there. But any team that wants to get him out of Rangers is going to pay a fortune because he's by far and away Gerrard's most important player, even though he is an absolute crank.
A better version of him is Edouard de Celtic. I think he's a shout.
Yeah, he's another one where he's probably ready to leave the Scottish League, isn't he? He's got a higher ceiling than staying there forever. But a club to going into a team that's playing in Europe or wants to be in Europe regularly is probably a step too far for him at the minute.
And not Diego Costa. He's been finished for years.
Yes.
No, that's never the right decision.
I'll say this now. Anyone who seriously wants Everton to sign Diego Costa in the year 2021 plays too much FIFA and just wants to see what he'd look like in an Everton kit. You'd get over it in the first 5 minutes and then you'd realise it's like watching Tosin, if not worse. His legs have completely gone. He's finished. Just let him go to wherever he's going to go now. He's so bad that even basically his boyhood club, I know he's from Brazil, but he's synonymous with Atletico Madrid, isn't he? He's an Atletico Madrid person through and through. He's got it in his blood. They let him go for nothing. That's how much they didn't want him anymore.
You'd rather have, I don't know, Callum Patterson from Sheffield.
Liam Brewster.
Well, no. I'd rather have Costa than Brewster.
Well, that really is a hammer blow.
No, he's the next big thing. Jürgen Klopp loved him so much that he never played him once.
Yeah.
But he's got a winner's medal from the Champions League final.
I know, and wore it to town to get his hair cut. Knobhead.
Isn't anyway, that the reason?
Forget him.
Honest to God.
But, no. It's one more striker I'll throw out there and I'll suggest because I think he's maybe gettable, I think, really. Would you go and take him? What's his face? Oh, I was going to say his name. He's going to help me now.
Does he play for?
He's in the league. He's down the bottom.
That narrows it down. So many teams down. Callum Pat.
Yeah, he's probably not available. But you know how much Mike Ashley loves a pound note. Would you go and maybe sign Callum Wilson on the cheap?
Yeah,
that wouldn't be on the cheap. I don't think that'd be on the cheap.
It would be on the sheet for Mike Ashley because Mike Ashley just will take anything, won't he? He's not asked how much he upsets the fans, and it looks like they're going down. Would you go into them and say
they won't go down?
They won't go down.
It'll be grim. It'll be grim, but they're not going to go down. They'll be bottom.
I wouldn't say they'll definitely go down, but I wouldn't say they definitely won't either. But he's just a player I rate who I would have liked to see those going for in the summer, but Newcastle got in there. And I think
nothing.
Is Joe Linton still crap?
Does he have a knock crap?
Or is he being used poorly?
No, he's just crap.
What made them pay that much money for him?
It was Mike Ashley.
I'm not giving him the blame for that. He's a lot of things, mate, but he is not outright stupid, mate.
It would lead to family then.
Someone's bought him. He's probably approved it, but he's not the one who's looked at that and thought, let's pay 40 million for that fella. He'll be the same. And he's probably more annoyed than anyone that he spent 40 million on that crap.
It wasn't Steve Bruce anyway, because it was done before he was there. So
I don't know. No one's going to put their hands up and take that, but I'd be shocked if someone like Mike Ashley agreed to part with 40 million for him. But Ashley Million wouldn't sign Mess.
Ashley Williams.
Mike Ashley is so tight with his money that even if he could get Mbappe for 40 million, he'd probably have to really think hard about it, parting with that money. So, do you know what I mean? Well, has anyone else got any striker suggestions who are realistic or half realistic or just at least interesting to talk about?
Yeah,
I feel like we're probably going lower.
Yeah, we're going to end up dropping down a few divisions at this rate, but We'll leave it at that anyway. I think
we'll sign Umar. Should we sign Umar back? He's not got a
goal. Yeah, he was. Where's? You know.
We'll end it on that note. We'll definitely end it on anyone. That note. Let's just go.
Strapple you mentioned.
Yeah, if someone's got Niasse's number, please send it to the club and ask, and the club will give him a ring and offer him a 6-month deal, and he can come back and just make us laugh at least.
Yeah, I mean, that's about it.
I've got nothing to suggest.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm. We'll leave it at that anyway. But for you podcast listeners, of course, we're going to finish with the classic quiz, match day squad quiz. Owen up against Paul. And this is going to be an interesting one because it's one I remember very vividly, and I'll tell you for why in a moment. But first of all, we'll do the coin toss. Paul, I'll let you do this coin toss. Heads or tails, Paul?
Heads.
And it's tails. So, Owen, you get to pick first or second, Owen?
I'll go first.
Owen's going first, and with that in mind, we'll reveal a fixture in question in Tense Quiz Music, if you please. And the fixture in question is Everton versus Aston Villa. Of course, this was in mind, we were going to be looking ahead to a Villa game, but of course, that's not happening now. But it's Everton versus Aston Villa, Everton 2, Villa 2, Saturday the 2nd of April 2011. It was actually my birthday, so I do remember this one very, very vividly. But, 2nd of April 2011, Everton 2, Villa 2. 11 starters and 2 youth substitutes to choose from. You're up first, Owen.
I do remember this game vaguely. I'll start off by saying Tim Howard.
Yeah, Tim Howard. That was easy enough.
I always struggle with these sort of latter-era Moyes quizzes because I do remember them. It's just I put a lot of them out of their minds because it was not very good to watch.
It was very dull. This was one of the worst periods of the Moyes era, this, for me.
Yeah, it was still a good team overall, but it just felt like a proper grind supporting us, do you know what I mean? So I've forgotten about a lot of it. 2011, did you say?
Yeah, this is when I'll be honest, I mean, it was my birthday and it was like with my mates watching it, but it was very.
I remember the game. This was the game. Oh, I'm not going to say where an Everton player hit a shot. It was about 40 yards over the line, and the referee didn't give it.
I don't remember that. Watch it if I get this wrong on the first guess. But if we're going to say 2011, I'm going to go for Jack Rodwell.
You got it wrong, mate.
Was he even on the bench?
Was he at the club? He was at the club, but he must have been injured because he wasn't even on the bench.
Well, I knew I'd lose. I really don't get these quizzes from like the late 2000s, early 2010s. I put that period out of my mind as best as I can.
So with that in mind, we'll finish it anyway. Owen?
Phil Neville.
Yep, Phil Neville was the captain.
How did I not pick him? Of course, he played. Would Beckford play? Was that the season Beckford was around?
Yeah, Beckford was the starter.
And it was his shot that went 40 yards over the bar.
I remember it.
It's still bouncing in the net now.
We're not going in turns now, are we? Would 2011. Leon Lechtenov.
Billy Lechtenov and Osman are there. Both of them played. Osman actually scored the opening goal.
Yeah.
Billy was there. Coleman wasn't in the team at that point, I don't think.
You assume wrong. Coleman started.
Did he? I always remember Coleman's breakthrough game was he came off the bench against Tottenham at Goodison when it was 2-0 and we went on to equalise 2-2. But I can't remember what season that was.
That was 2010, so this was like the year after that.
Wasn't right.
This is when Kale. He played.
Kale would have been around, wouldn't he?
Kale would have been around, but he was injured, I think, for this because he's nowhere to be seen.
Okay.
Fellaini.
Who'd have played?
Fellaini. Well, there was no Fellaini here. I can only assume he'd been suspended for elbowing someone.
Who would have played in midfield then? Phil Neville would have been Neville with Osman, would he? Osville. Did Saha? Was Saha playing?
There was no Saha. He was injured for the rest of the season by this stage, remember rightly.
Oh, what a surprise.
Tony Ibbett.
Tony Ibbett did start. He was at right back.
Oh, so this was when Coleman first broke in and he was at right mid, like the first year or so.
Coleman was on the wing for about the first two seasons, yeah.
Yeah, this was after he came back from Blackpool, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Right, so how many have we named so far?
You've got Howard and Hibbert, Neville and Coleman, Billy, Osman, Beckford.
Seven, right, so there's four more.
Yep, Jaggy Elka started at centre-half.
Distan.
Distan started at centre-half.
Baines.
Heitinger.
Baines played at left-back and Baines scored the equalising goal late on from the penalty spot. It finished 2-0. Heitinger did play in defensive mid. It was Neville and Heitinger centre mid in a very defensive Moyes approach.
Jesus Christ.
No wonder that you were trying to erase this from your memory.
Yeah. I'm going to say, can you blame me for putting this out of my mind?
you've got the complete starting 11 already there. There's some Howard, Hibbert, Baines, Jags and Distan, Neville and Heitinger in midfield, Coleman on the right, Osman on the left, Billy and then Beckford. And then there's two U subs, which you've still yet to get.
I remember this.
Good luck indeed with this.
Velios.
Yeah, Velios came on for Distan.
First sub appearance.
And it would have been some other no-mark as well, wouldn't it, the other one? Because this was at a point where we were just putting kids on the bench, wasn't it?
Yep. This was Velios' first appearance for Everton.
I hate this fella. Did Jose Baxter get a sniff, did he?
No, he did not. I mean, I like the use of the terminology there, but he didn't actually get a sniff.
Well, he probably did.
Here's a player I know who Noel will have been on the bench. He wouldn't have played, but he was on the bench because he was our backup at the time. Was it Carlo Nash?
Carlo Nash, no, well, he wasn't on the bench.
Jan Mucha.
It was Jan Mucha was the bench, but obviously he didn't get on. Who was the final used sub?
Yakubu.
No Yakubu.
Was it
Arteta? McGuigay. It was McGuigay.
McGuigay. Wow, what a footballer.
Yeah, when John sent me this one, he went, get on that bench, he says, and I'll show you why. So obviously the starting 11 was Tim Howard, Tony Ibbett, Leighton Baines, Johnny Heitinger, Phil Jagielka, Sylvain Distan, Phil Neville, Seamus Coleman, Billy Alekhinov, Leon Osman and Jermaine Beckford. Now here's your substitutes. Jan Mucha, Chodran Mustafi,
okay.
Toto Enciala,
Adam Forshaw.
Place of Shrewsbury now, Toto.
Adam Forshaw.
I don't even know who that is. I've heard of Adam Forshaw. That name would like ring a bell with me. That's what I meant before when I said our bench will just be made up with no marks who never really broke through to the team. They were just there because we had no one else. But I remember like Mustafi and Eric Dyer being in the reserves. And I remember like a handful of others like John Paul Kissick and Adam Forshaw. But I don't know who that other fella is you've just mentioned.
Yeah, there was Mucha, Mustafi and Toto Enciala. Adam Forshaw, Magai Gay, Apostolos Velios, and Conor McAleenan on the bench.
Oh, wow.
Oh, he's the most famous one of all, isn't he? This player who was in our reserves forever.
Yeah.
Was Luke Garbin not around?
He actually was around by that point, but he hadn't, like, even he was, like, too young at this stage.
Okay, now.
Oh, what a...
I remember Velios.
I know that team, like, finished quite well in that season. We were in the top, weren't we, like 7th or 8th again?
Like 7th or 8th, yeah.
7th or 8th, which is respectable considering we had absolutely no money, but how grim is that lineup if you read it to yourself?
Honestly, it was. I was a season ticket holder that year.
I was.
And it was revolting. It was some of them was that I can actively remember the lowest point of it for me was if I remember a game in December, 0-0 against Wigan at home, and the worst one was, I got on camera on Match of the Day, went on me in the Gladys with a face like a smacked ass watching it.
The lowest period for me around that period, I don't know if it was the same season or it might have been the season after, I'll never forget it, was the game where Howard scored that goal against Bolton.
I was about to say that.
No, but to this day, I have never watched that goal back because the game was just so depressing. We ended up losing it very late. Gary Cahill scored the winner and then signed for Chelsea the next day. But I just remember thinking, this is the most depressed I have ever been supporting Everton at that point. Just a team that had nothing about it, was going nowhere, couldn't create anything to save its life. And even if the goalie got a free goal, couldn't get a result.
Yeah, and I remember that season Bolton got relegated as well. We're still
they were an absolute shambles, and Cahill was practically had his suitcase packed and was halfway out the door, and then in the last minute scored a winner at the Park End. And I just remember thinking, I don't know why I bother supporting this club. I remember
he didn't even celebrate; he was too busy asking if Chelsea had been in touch.
Yeah, I remember afterwards getting driven home by my mum, and we had football phone in on. And Graham Sharp was trying to dress it up on the radio. It was mate, you've won league titles with this club and you're trying to defend that. Gee, what an absolute puppy you are. You just will say anything the club want you to. You've won trophies and you're happy with what you've just seen. And I just remember thinking, I'm never going to take seriously anything any ex-player says about the club ever again, because they're just... they're not speaking from the heart. They can't be.
Party lines, do you mean?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Just being mouthpieces for the board at that time, who were under a lot of criticism because that was during that mad 2-year spell.
That was the Blue Union era, wasn't it?
It was that period,
the Arteta money era, that was.
Yeah, we didn't spend any money until we signed Gibson for $500,000 in the January of 2012. We've gone ages without signing a player for a fee. We've got Beckford on it. Beckford was the only player we'd signed or someone before. We got him on a free.
He was on a Bosman, yeah.
Yeah.
What a grim time that was.
That was just the lowest point I can ever remember.
Yeah, but then you think that's the lowest point, and then actually years later, Martinez signed and he asked for $14 million.
That was worse. Under that Martinez was still the worst point. Latter day Martinez, where
he signed and he asked for $14 million.
Yeah, that last 6 months under Martinez was the worst it's ever been for me. That was the point where I was just like, I don't even want to follow Everton anymore. I don't even want to check the results. I'm just so fed up.
Yeah, I was so fed up. I distanced myself so much from it.
Yeah, it's like, I'm so fed up of where this club's going. I can't stand the person in charge of it. I can't stand most of the players. I've just completely given up.
The only thing that comes close to me was that 4 weeks under David Unsworth.
Oh, the sorry Ronald, the Vrana pasties.
Yeah, that was different.
I was focusing on someone made that meme and I just lost it.
That was that for me, that period where we were just with Sack Koeman, and then we were an absolute shambles for about a month until we finally got Allardyce in. That was more just upsetting. It's I can't believe we're in the state we're gonna be in, but I didn't I was still supporting the team and I was really behind them and hoping that Unsworth could do something. But it's under Martinez and under Latter Day Moyes, I was the point it just turned to apathy. It was I don't even care if we lose at this point. I just don't like the people at the club. I'm not bothered if they're going to get sacked or the players are all feeling like nothing they do works, whereas under Unsworth, I wanted it to work for them.
Yeah,
anyway, we'll finish on a bit more cheerful note. Owen, you won that quiz, so you want to pick a song to finish on it?
Well, I said after the guy the other day chose Corrie, I'd choose Emmerdale, so Emmerdale.
Oh my God. Okay, well, there you go. We'll finish with
you're serious?
Emmerdale theme tune.
The
guy
the other day chose Corrie.
Yeah, I know.
I know this is against the rules, but if he's not going to pick an actual song, he's just going to pick that. Can I pick the actual song we can have after Emmerdale then?
Feel free. You can choose her anyway. I was just going to say.
If you pick an actual song, fair enough, but that's more of a tune. Do you know what I mean? There's no actual music.
Why, have you got a music, theme tune in mind, Paul?
No, that's what I mean. I've got a song in mind, but if you win, you get to pick the song. But if we're just going to listen to the Emmerdale theme tune, then do you know what I mean?
I want people to have to listen to the Emmerdale theme tune in a way.
I mean, it's one of them.
You're just in one of those moods tonight. Like, everyone's getting it off you. First, Graham Potter, then that lad who plays for
Fabio
Wolves.
Fabio Silva. Joe Williams has had it. Now it's,
now it's all the
listeners. Anyone who's tuned into the podcast has got to listen to them, Dale.
They've been put through the ringer tonight on this podcast. I've had a go of everyone.
Yeah.
But I'll have Paul choose them because I don't want to completely depress people, and I'm not choosing one myself. So,
all right, put Emmerdale on if because he's won. He's got to have what he said. But if we want an actual song, let's have something cheerful. You know, I like Casey and the Sunshine Band. Let's have That's the Way I Like It as well.
Oh, nice.
That's the way I like Everton at the minute. Grinding out wins. Upsetting the apple cart, being really high in the table and being that club that everyone knows is good but doesn't want to praise.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we'll finish with Emmerdale and Casey and the Sunshine Bands. We'll do that like one after the other. I'm going to leave you with that.
People can hear Emmerdale.
It's one of them. But to tell you what, Emmerdale followed by Casey and the Sunshine Band, that's not a combination you get very often, is it? So
it's unusual.
It's very unusual. It's like this very unusual podcast we've just had. So we'll leave it at that, guys. Thank you for tuning on the Toffee Blues, and we'll see you next time.